Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
All right. First order of business. Kate, get the fuck out of the studio. Like, you can't stay. Like, there's no way you can stay. You got to go home.
I'm not feeling well.
You got to go home. I'm not even kidding. Like, you got to get out. You're going to make everybody else sick.
Yeah, well, misery loves company, so that's the plan.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't love company at all.
I got Brent sick already.
I know, but you shouldn't be breathing into everybody's microphone. I had no idea you were this sick.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. My eyeball looks like your eyeball. How are you doing, by the way? But let me turn away from beat.
I'm going to get my eyeball cut open. You should seriously go home, and we'll get somebody to cover for you. No. Kate, I think you should leave.
No. What is this, a joke?
Get out.
You need to
get out.
Get out. Honestly, Kate, if you do stay and Dave sees you, he will be fucking furious.
I already passed by him in the hallway this morning and I looked real chipper. So I tricked him. So I'm in.
All right, you're a grown ass woman, you could stay, but just know that I want you to leave
cuz you disinfect the mic when we're done.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Here we go. We have some sickness in the squad, and we also have four rounds in the magazine. Round number one, there's a woman who unwittingly helped assassinate Kim Jong-un's half-brother, and she said that she did it to be a YouTube star, and there but for the grace of God go I. Round number two, a study by Duke University found that employers think veterans lack social-emotional abilities and are less likely to hire them for certain job.
What?
Whatever, nerds. Yeah.
The yeah, fuck is Kate. That?
Right. Those fucking pussies.
Round number three. What?
Round number three. Senior Army leaders are triggered that soldiers are violating the Phantom Warrior Standard Handbook. Whatever the fuck that is. We're going to walk you through some of their concerns. Round number four. We have an interview with an NHL motivator who used to be an Army Ranger. You're going to want to stick around for that interview that Kate and Cons did. And today's show is going to be brought to you by our good friends at CBDMD. CBDMD is committed to providing you with the highest quality THC-free CBD oils. Whether you're gunning for a raise in the Olympic gold medal, you need to stay at the top of your game. Everyone from Weekend Warriors to pros like Bubba Watson, Steve Smith Jr., and Daniel Cormier trust CBDMD to give them the natural support and relief they need to reach their goals. And with so many world-class professional athletes turning to CBDMD, you can make sure you're getting a safe, clean product from their tentacles to topicals to bath bombs and even the pet products. They've got something for everyone, but it's the fast-acting targeted support that you need the most. I actually should probably get some for Gus because my dog, we were talking before the episode, he's an emotional little bitch when it starts raining outside. He just wants to go outside. He's been crying all day. If I had some CBD for him, I would probably not have to deal with that all the time. Or whenever it lightens, he gets nervous too. That'll probably help calm him down. You need to get your dog that, yourself that. Get the bath bombs. I recommend the lavender scent. It is wonderful. Our listeners are going to get 25% off their purchase when you use the promo code CBT at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com. Promo code ZBT for 25% off your order. CBD oil products from CBDMD. I got a call actually on Friday night, or a text on Friday night, that said that Mr. Sweat was in the hospital. He had a stroke. I mean, it was just
very sad.
Just terrible timing. But his grandson said that he went to the hospital whenever he was there and played the interview back so he could hear it. And he said that he loved it. He loved feeling like that he was, quote, famous. He said it made him feel really cool. So thinking about a 97-year-old guy just had a stroke, going through so much stuff and bringing a little smile on his face. Pretty cool. Pretty cool thing to be a part of. How was y'all's weekend?
Hope he's doing all right.
Mine was full of activities, a lot of football, good time, had by all.
Yeah, and it was a bye week for Army, so you got to kind of just enjoy, sit back and enjoy the other games, which is nice.
I saw firsthand that Jack Mack was threatened to an inch of his life for giving out a bad gambling tip.
Bad gambling tips, yeah.
Yeah, you can't do that. Mm. That's he said Instead of saying guarantee, he didn't say guarantee, but he did say trust me, which is just the same as saying guarantee.
Fickle world, that'll get your kneecaps broken, my friend.
Yes, sir.
My weekend was good. It was my mom's, when this episode comes out, October 1st is my mom's birthday, so it was her birthday weekend, went down there.
Oh, I didn't know her and McCartney had the same birthday.
October 1st, it's a good one. It's really kicking off the spooky season.
Mm-hmm.
But I got her, she likes to ride a bicycle, so I got her, I'm not like a regular mom, I'm a cool mom. I got her a cool mom bicycle outfit, so I got her a little pair of tights and this cool little Columbia vest, you know, the puffy navy blue vest that all the basic ladies wear. That's, I was like, ooh, so she's going to be crushing it.
She's going to be stunting all little, over her community.
Little prancer sizing, remember that video?
Oh, yes. It's cooler than the prancer size outfit. But she's the best. I had a cold, so I like went down there for her birthday, and instead I was like, "Mom, can you make me soup?" Like, so
you know,
like,
that probably made her fucking mom year that you went down there because you were sick and wanted her to take care of you. Those moments now, because McCartney's not like in super cuddle mode anymore because she's seven. If she is feeling sick and she just wants to like snuggle up, my heart swells like I'm the Grinch on Christmas. Like it just completely swells up.
As soon as I got off the train and we got back to there, they live at a 55 and up community. As soon as we got there, as I was taking off my shoes, I turned around. She's putting the ingredients for chicken noodle soup on the counter, and she was like, "Yay!" She was like, pumped.
"Very excited." That's awesome.
Also, we went to this fancy ass restaurant Saturday night for her dinner, and of course, everybody else at the table is getting like wine and Cosmo, and she was like, "Bud heavy, please, bottle of Bud." So she's still still sticking to her guns. Happy birthday!
I honestly thought you were gonna say we're at a fancy restaurant. I ordered a hot dog. No,
I did get the chicken fingers. Yeah. Oh,
chicken fingers. Yes. Step above a hot dog.
Big birthday weekend for you too, there, chaps.
Yeah, big birthday weekend. We had Cardi's birthday party. It was a great time had by all. And we went to the museum. Came back, watched a couple movies. She got to have as many snacks as she wanted. She loved it. It was a great time. Got her a scooter. It's coming in the mail for her actual birthday tomorrow. So she's going to be doing a little scoot goofing. She's pumped. She'll be pumped about that for sure. I had a great weekend. It was a nice little dad weekend.
And your boy Minshew continues to ball out.
Yeah, football life is good. It's nice to have a quarterback who's young. I feel bad for Nick Foles, though. Imagine going to sign that contract, coming down to Jacksonville thinking you're going to be the man. Don't even last one quarter until your clavicle completely shatters, and then you have this rookie sensation that the entire league like loves, and even non-Jaguars fans are like super interested. Sucks for the Foles family.
Yeah. I don't know. Care, I think he'll bounce back. He'll find his way.
Boring.
You're not a football gal?
All right, let's get going with the show. And as leader, I'm going to give Kate, in between rounds, an opportunity to clear her nose and cough if she needs to.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. Do you need to, Kate?
I do. I'm sorry.
All right, here we go.
All right, guys, for round one, Siti Asia, hopefully I'm saying that right, she lives in rural Indonesia, and she described being recruited by men she believed to be prank TV producers who had her carry out a prank where she rubbed baby oil in strangers' faces. Haha, you guys know that old trick where you walk up to a stranger and you rub baby oil on their face?
Yeah, classic.
Yes, classic. In an interview on Sunday, Siti said the... Siti? Siti?
I think you're saying it correctly.
Siti said the men told her she could become a YouTube star by carrying out the pranks for viral videos. In fact, the men are believed to be North Korean secret agents and were recruiting Asia to assassinate Kim Jong-nam, the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. She, alongside Vietnamese woman Duong Thai Hong, killed Kim Jong-nam at Kuala Lumpur Airport in 2017 by smearing a liquid on his face, similar to the pranks Siti said she had carried out several times before. However, this time the liquid was the nerve agent VX, which swiftly led to Kim's death and the arrest of both women. According to Siti, she had no idea the substance was a poison. She could have been killed as well, but for her decision to quickly wash the substance off her hands.
I can totally see somebody falling for this. If you have somebody like set up, because you have these type of YouTube videos all the time. I mean, my favorite one is the one where they do the shampoo on the guy's head over at the beach.
Yes.
And it's like this big muscle bound dude and he can't stop like washing his hair. It keeps getting more frothy and frothy and frothy. You would see this, and the way that they set up the rest of the story, you're like, Jesus, this is brilliant. Tell us what's next, Kate.
Yeah, so, and these two women, when she rubbed it on him and it killed, she quickly washed her hands. She moved on. She thought it was part of the prank, whatever. Well, she was later charged with Kim's murder. But the charges against them were abruptly dropped earlier this year before either of them gave evidence, and both women were allowed to return home. In her interview, CD described two producers training her with the baby oil smearing prank, paying her as much as $120 per time, vastly more than she could earn in her regular job as a masseuse. So you're barely scraping by, you're barely making any money. These guys come to you and they're like, hilarious thing, $120 a time, you go smear it on. And they have her actually doing this to people with regular baby oil. So she really
they have
is.
It, money they have and YouTube star to boot.
To Kim. They have her doing it to him.
Yeah.
Like the actual one where he gets killed.
But they had her doing it before that to multiple other people with just non-fucking poison. She said, I was nervous about doing the pranks at first in case someone reacted badly or hit out, but I was very happy to have the work. I question why anyone would want to watch this sort of thing, but they told me Japanese audiences love it.
Have you ever seen those Japanese game shows?
Dude.
It's the perfect setup.
It's the perfect, because those game shows, talk about going down a YouTube rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the viral one the other year where they had those, like, 48 stairs made of ice?
Yes.
And they just had, like, 20 people try and go up the ice stairs, and they all just got really hurt, and everybody was like, ah!
I tried out for one when I lived in Japan.
Really?
Yeah.
Get out.
It was one of the ones where the ball bounces back and forth, and then you have to jump over the little thing. I tried out for it and didn't make it. Those things are fucking difficult, man.
Yes.
And that was before I was a fat piece of shit. Now I could definitely not do it. But then I was limber, used to do obstacle courses all the time. I was in good shape. Still couldn't do it.
But I can see this being a believable.
Yeah.
I would believe this. If somebody said this to me now, I would do it. Like, if $120 a pop just for rubbing oil on somebody's face, that's good money.
Money, but.
Now, after knowing this story, I probably would say, wouldn't. Wait a minute. Yeah.
But also, do you guys think this is actually funny? Like, not her killing
the
guy.
The murder part?
No, not the murder part. Not the murder part. The part where she was smeared in on other people as a prank. Do you think this as a prank is funny?
I think if it's a harmless prank, sometimes they're funny. But in this part of the world, you have to remember in this part of the world, too, there's like acid attacks that happen.
Right.
There's like in a terrorism type of global environment. I don't think these kind of pranks are good to pull on people. Normal pranks I'm fine with, but I could see if something got rubbed on your face, you could legitimately
panic.
What the fuck just happened?
I would probably punch the person.
Yeah, I would lose my... I would be like, immediately I would try and wash it off probably. Also, I'm just thinking now of the people who did get the random smears on their face, like reading this story a month later and being like, mother of God.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Just waiting to die.
But speaking of those people, they were fine, but her last prank went differently, she said. This time she had to carry a specific target and another woman. So before they were just having her pick a random stranger. This time she was given a specific target and another woman, Hong, also trying to carry out the smear. So she had this time they teamed her up with that other woman. In the end, Hwang reached Kim before CD did, and she did not end up touching him, though both had the poison ready to use. The women's handlers had little concern for what would happen to them afterwards. It was like, all right, thanks, bye. And CD said Hwang ended up smearing Kim's face just before she could reach him. They fled in different directions after the attack and both went straight to different washrooms to clean the sticky liquid off their hands, an act that would certainly save their lives. Much of the Kim Jong-nam story remains unresolved, and the murder trial is pretty much over, but they wrote that the decision to end the trial was never fully explained, but came after Malaysia was lobbied by Vietnam and Indonesia. So I guess Malaysia is where it happened. The other two countries where these women came from were like, clearly they were duped into doing this. And instead, Malaysia has named four North Korean men who are wanted over the assassination, but they've never been found. And I think Kim Jong-un's brother, like who clearly called for this hit on his brother, Kim Jong-nam, isn't he the guy who's like going to Disney all the time and spending all the money and hooking up with all the ladies and being like just a ridiculous fella?
I didn't know that. Is
so
that right?
I think he was jealous that he's like stuck in North Korea leading the regime.
And
he's
like educated in London, I believe. Like that's where he went to school. But can you imagine being these two women who just think that they're just out for a casual goof trying to go viral in Japan? And next thing they know, they kill a fucking dictator's brother and they're on trial in Malaysia. You'd have to be like, what in the fuck, man.
Yeah.
You'd be so, like, you could go, I don't think that Malaysia takes murder lightly.
Probably
no,
not.
No, not really.
They frown on it, even.
Actually, Malaysia does take murder from it. It depends on where you're at and what you're doing. But yeah, so a pretty crazy thing that these women, I don't know, the whole story is just nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes you think, like, That plot seems like a bad 007 assassination plot.
It almost seems like a parody of a 007
right.
movie.
And it worked.
Yes.
Right.
Crazy. But also, too, what's kind of surprising, when they said, oh, that's your target, I would think he's well known enough that they would recognize who that was and then say, oh, wait, maybe we don't want to prank him.
No shot. I mean, you would have to... I bet in America or in Malaysia, I bet you could show Kim Jong-nam's picture to 5 million people before the first person knows who he is.
I thought he was more well-known than that.
I will say this part's weird, though. They have you rubbing it on people's faces in random spots, and then they're like, all right, now for this last one, we're going to fly you to Malaysia and give you a specific target. Like, that would be like...
Red flags start to pop up. But, interesting.
Yeah. Wild.
All right, let's move on to round two.
All right, round two comes to us from our friends at Military Times. Just based off their resumes and cover letters, veterans' military service is working against them when they apply for jobs in certain fields, a new study says. The study, conducted by Duke University's Fuqua School of Business, found employers believe veterans are less suited for jobs that involve social-emotional skills and interacting with people than their non-veteran counterparts. Employees then rated candidates on a 9-point scale detailing how well they thought candidates would succeed. 1 if they thought the applicant was not at all likely to succeed, and 9 if they thought the candidate was extremely likely to succeed. The study found that veterans were rated much more suitable for low-feeling positions, such as a dishwasher and prep cook, than they were servers.
Okay, Duke University. This is classic Duke University right here. This isn't the study, it's Duke. It's a very West Pointy attitude, if I had to say it.
I don't know that we would ever... demean veterans in such a way.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Anyway, feels like something the Army would do.
Veteran applicants received a mean rating of 6.86 for the low-feeling positions, in contrast with a 5.34 mean rating for serving positions. Meanwhile, the disparity was far less significant among non-veteran applicants. The study found non-veteran applicants received a mean rating of 5.76 for low-feeling positions and a 5.53 rating for serving positions. When the veteran's resume did include volunteer work at a humane society where they calmed animals when stressed, veterans were ranked similarly to their non-veteran counterparts for their social-emotional skills. This study is weird.
What do you blame this on, Kate?
Just not knowing how to word things right, I think, when you get out. I think maybe if they're just looking at resumes here, because I know my resume was a mess when I first got out. I was like using all these terms and words that didn't...
Yeah, I had to send my resume to a good buddy of mine who's kind of like a mentor, and he's just completely overhauled the whole thing and said, all right, nobody understands what any of this means, so we got to word it in such a way that people in the civilian world can understand and how it translates.
I blame bumper stickers and t-shirts. I think that the people who constantly wear disgruntled veterans, or they have "I serve, so you have to stop being a pussy, you little bitch" t-shirt. Yeah. I think that's what ruins it, because it's like the same thing that we talked about last week with the military spouse, how it's one that ruins it. I think by and large, like, so many veterans get out of the service and they are completely normal functioning human beings. But the ones that are really amplified on social media are the ones who that's their entire being is
so
being,
you're saying,
like, the triggered veteran.
You're saying the resume didn't matter. It was that as soon as the people reading and judging these resumes saw the term veteran, they pictured the stone, violet, right? You kneel for the flag, fuck you. Like, you
right.
picture that. Okay, so you're saying there's a bias
there. That's exactly what
there.
It is. Especially whenever you're dealing with somebody at an institution of higher learning like Duke, like a little more white collar of a school that has that's a private school that is known for being a little bit pompous at times. Whenever you see that and the basic general principle of what somebody that goes to a school like that would normally think of veterans, whether it's uneducated, they don't have the ability to go to a college, they get out their damaged goods because of the things that they've had. I think that plays a huge role in a research study like this.
Well, I think, too, the part where they said volunteering is what made them get a better, higher score on being relatable and seeing that they volunteered. The only good job I got immediately after getting out was through volunteerism, led me to a job at Comedy Central. But it was through that path, because I wasn't getting anywhere with my resume.
I thought you were going to tell a story about your washer and dryer job.
No, oh my God, I almost worked for a ramp company, National Ramp.
I kind of almost wish you had for maybe 2 months or something.
Oh my
just
God.
For the stories.
But I would go to all those veteran job fairs that were supposed to be so, and I know the intention is good, but I remember going to all these job fairs where there would be like a breakfast beforehand. The one was here in New York City. I met Dakota Myers many years ago at it. And before we were allowed to roam, the guy who was running it gave a speech to the people there who were hiring all the different companies. And he was like, if you don't hire a veteran today, you're literally taking food out of their mouths. And it made us seem like these like poor charity little
cases.
Creatures,
helpless, yeah.
Charity cases. And it was so embarrassing and so demoralizing to me. But I went to a bunch of those back in the day when I was like desperate. I could not find a job. And I think a big part of it was that my resume just fucking sucked. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to work. I was like, hard worker, knows Excel. Like, I just didn't know how to do a resume. And that
can do a 70-second flex arm hang.
Right. And what I did in the military, like they talk about, oh, you got to translate it over. It really wasn't that translatable. I didn't come out with a specific, what is it they say in the movie Taken? A specific set of skills.
I think you're selling yourself short there. I think you did.
Well, that's, I just didn't know how to translate
right,
it.
Right.
That's
yeah, yeah.
Like those buzzwords and stuff, but it's true.
I'd imagine, I just look at this study too, and it's obviously biased, but also the people they were using, it's a good, probably better than. I can't talk right now.
Duke, man. Fuck Duke. That's what we have to
no,
say about
No, it's probably
this
a better... Jesus. Why can't I come out with this thought?
Well, you should have had a higher education, maybe.
I love it.
Oh, my God. I know what I want to say, and I can't find the words. I don't know. It just seems like these people would get these scores even if they weren't veterans. They pick people that have this skill set. Oh, my God.
Well, you know what? Also...
I'm done.
Wait.
I'm done.
Side note to any veterans listening who have these problems, American Corporate Partners, when I couldn't find a job and I was having trouble with my resume, ACP program, American Corporate Partners, they hooked me up with I had just finished communications at Fordham, mm-hmm. but I couldn't figure it out. And they linked me up with a journalist at the Wall Street Journal who became my mentor and would meet with me for coffee, would go over my resume with me. Mm-hmm. It was so helpful. And they pick whatever your major is in college, or whatever you're trying to accomplish or where you want to work, they'll find you a civilian mentor or a veteran mentor who knows the ropes, who's really good and well-versed in their job, and they'll help you navigate it because sometimes that's the biggest hurdle. So check them out, American Corporate Partners.
I think that's all you need is just a mentor, someone who's, I think, preferably done it before. So I think preferably you would look for a veteran who has made the transition successfully into the civilian world and just meet with them and talk to them. As you said, that was all the difference in the world. So I think if you... or getting out of the military, you're listening to this, just find a mentor, someone that can help you along the
way.
But
we can also agree that there is a lot of veterans who are emotionally stunted. Like,
you can't use a lot
of the leadership principles that you learn in the five branches of service with a civilian. You can't tell somebody to shut the fuck up, you boot-ass bitch, and just do what the fuck I said. Like, that can't be your leadership model.
And I think, too, a lot of times, like, the resumes have it, too. It's like... it's their only identity. And I think maybe seeing the volunteer work shows that, okay, maybe you're not just overkill on the military thing. There's other stuff you do too might help. Because you're right, there is, again, I love lurking on Bumble. Every time I come across a veteran profile, a dude, I know, even when I'm sad, like I never mention it online. It's something, when you get to know me, I'll tell you about it maybe. But it's every single photo is them in the military. Their whole profile is about their time in the military. And it's like, hard pass, dude. Fuck no. No.
No. Can you imagine, like, even like somebody in media, like having a show that was just all about the military? Like, how fucking gross
would
that
even
be?
Still,
that'd be wild.
But like, that's a small part of what we do every day. We do all sorts
right.
of other shit too. It's like,
yeah.
So, you know, I think being able to show that there's more to you, and it is a huge in your frame of context and everything for your life, it's a huge deal, but you have to show that there's more to you than that, and you can't let that be your whole identity.
Round three comes to us from our friends at U.S. Army What the Fuck Moments. I love when they post something straight from a safety brief or from a briefing before you start school. And this is just absolutely perfect because there is a command that you could tell. I would bet that this concern either comes from, I would guess, a lieutenant colonel or a sergeant major is where these concerns come from, because they're at a school. They're doing like a battalion level brief or something like that. And they have these bullet points of things that are going wrong, the most commonly violated standards of the Phantom Warrior Standard Handbook.
The Phantom Warrior
what
Standard
does that mean,
Handbook?
Con? What is the Phantom Warrior Standard Handbook?
The Phantom Warrior is their unit name.
Oh, okay.
Why?
What's
isn't
the unit?
Phantom fake?
Yeah, it's an interesting name. I'm trying to figure out.
Why would you have your name be the fake Warriors?
I don't
know.
Because
the Phantom of the Opera is badass.
Yeah.
This unit at their ball, they all wear a half mask and they're spooky and there's a mystery at everyone.
Well, there's some things going on at this unit that people are not happy about. And it starts with soldiers wearing the physical fitness uniforms at unauthorized locations. Cons, how do you feel about that as a leader? Somebody's wearing fucking PT gear, just walking around the PX like a nasty little shit.
Well, I mean, you're just making the assumption that they are not where they're supposed to be. In other words, they could be on their way to PT or coming right from PT and they're just running an errand.
See, that's not an excuse.
Okay.
You can't be in an unauthorized location no matter what if you're in unauthorized gear.
Yeah. So I read this as soldiers wearing the physical fitness uniform at unauthorized locations. I'm thinking, oh, there's that strip club that nobody's supposed to go to. That's where they're wearing their damn PT uniforms.
I legit think it's at the PX. They're in their PT uniform in the PX.
Probably. I'm just thinking they're probably going to or from PT, and they were just stopping off. Not allowed. Right. Real quick, though, a quick Google, and I'm surprised I didn't remember this because I was in 3 Corps at Fort Hood. One of the nicknames is the Phantom Corps.
Oh.
So this might be at this might be 3 Corps at Fort Hood.
So, all right.
Anyway.
The next one on the bullet list.
Striped OCPs. Or stripped OCPs. So that is like the, you know, the one that looks like the Frogman where it has the cami, it has the cami sleeves with the white shirt that's like thinner so you can sweat through it a lot easier.
Yes.
Dry a lot easier. People are wearing those around like nasties. Those are only authorized in training or at combat missions. They're not authorized for daily use.
Right.
No.
Not wearing headgear, pumping gas, or walking to the PX or the shopette.
So that's like, hey, I'm pulling up to get gas or the PX, and instead of just plopping my headgear on for the 3 second walk inside or while pumping gas,
I'm gonna
fire through some of these other ones because this feels like the list. If you said what are the main reasons you're gonna get out, it's probably a soldier, sailor, airman, or marine probably says because I got in trouble for walking and talking, texting, or other activity on my cell phone while in uniform. I got in trouble for having not using a hands-free device while operating a vehicle to include a motorcycle. I got in trouble for playing loud music in a POV, for speeding while on post, for having my hands in my pockets, for walking with a gallon jug, for failing to render proper customs and courtesy, and for having a civilian vehicle on ranges. This is just a who's who of things that people hate getting into.
I will say, though,
what's with walking around with gallon jugs? I don't get that one.
I used to do that all the time. A gallon jug of water all day. Like,
Katie, hydrated?
Whoa. Oh my God, I was super fucking hydrated. I still, my pee is clear.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. But the one thing I will say, playing loud music in your POV, in your personal vehicle, like, you know better. You're on a fucking military base. You know there's crusty ass old gunnies and officers all around you.
Yeah.
If you're blaring your shit so loud that your rearview mirror is shaking, I used to ride around with my buddy J-Mo. He had this huge boat of a Cadillac that he got, the whole system. He spent all his money on a big ass system.
And
it'd be like, boom. And I would always slink down in the seat because I knew we were about to get lit the fuck up. And a couple times.
When it's your car and your jam comes on, it's
so
hard.
It's hard not
to. I used to listen to More Than a Feeling by Boston. And
More Than a Feeling.
So do that the second you get off base or the second you're in a non-populated area off base. Old Lady Kate here, I'm saying.
All these are really simple to not do, not get in trouble for.
Speeding on post. One time, I California rolled a stop sign in a populated area of Camp Pendleton in my little 2000 Honda CR-V. Or no, it was my... Sorry, pardon me. It was my 2000 Hyundai Sonata.
Whoa.
I own two cars from the same year. Very fancy. But I California rolled a stop sign. And like it's like martial law on these bases. Immediately, a car pulls in front of me, cuts me off, stops. A car pulls behind me, and a car pulls. I got boxed in by three separate higher-ups.
How does that even happen?
They all got out and knife-handed the shit out of me while I was in my car. Yeah. It was like they...
How did they like come together and coordinate that attack on you?
I don't think they all knew they were doing it. I think all three of them saw it, and they were like, oh, this little motherfucker, and they all had the same idea.
Wow.
I love it.
That's crazy.
It was like a coordinate. It was like a shark smelling
blood.
Keeping
Kate accountable. I love
that. But also, chaps, I mean, come on. Be honest. You have definitely yelled at Marines for one or many of these.
Every single one on the list. There is no doubt in my mind that I have gone out of Marine for doing all of those.
Get together, Phantom Warriors. we're the Phantom Warriors, and we can't carry jugs of water, so watch out. Round number 4, you guys. JB Spizo, interviewed him. He actually came to us from Spit and Chicklets, the ice hockey podcast here, because he was an Army Ranger himself, but he trained the Rangers ice hockey team up at West Point, no less. He's a leadership course guy who, now that he's out, he takes sports teams and C-suite business level people, and he takes them through military leadership and teaches them leadership through that. So very motivating fella. Let's check it out. Now on Zero Blog 30, we are joined by JB Spizzo. Saying that right?
That's perfect.
I didn't know if it was Spice-O. That's a Spice-O, JB. We're joined by performance coach and co-founder of JBSLeaders.com and author of the book Warrior Leadership. He retired from the U.S. Army as a sergeant major in 2010 after 26 years of military service. And this is, I'm going to read this like the end of a medicine ad, because there's a lot of things to read here. But these are positive side effects of a life well lived.
You don't have to read the whole thing.
10 years in special operations, where he led U.S. Army Rangers in Panama and Haiti. He served in Afghanistan working with coalition forces. A military renaissance man of sorts. Drill sergeant, special ops instructor, OCS instructor, head baseball coach of the Military Academy Prep School. And then he served at the Hogwarts of our Military Academy, West Point, as general manager of the Army Athletic Sports Complex. This guy's been through Ranger School, Airborne, Halo, Static Line and Halo Jumpmaster, Seer, Pathfinder, Drill Instructor, Advanced, Scuba, Diving, Schools. And has any of that prepared you to deal with some of the wildest and most ridiculous human beings on the entire planet, ice hockey players?
It has all prepared me for that. Yeah. Because you're exactly right. Ice hockey players are
a different breed.
They are a different breed. You got to love them, though. They work hard, as all athletes do.
Sure.
As you know, Connor, being an athlete yourself, and Kate, you know, former Marine, you know, I think that everybody, whether you're a stay at home parent, you're a school teacher, you're a bus driver, you're a first responder, you want to be great at something. So, what I try to do is impart leadership on people. And my goal is to help individuals become leaders.
And how, you know, 26 years in the military, so many incredible accomplishments. How did you get tied in with the sports world? How did that come to be?
Well, fortunately, it was because I worked at West Point. And
right.
2005, the New York Rangers came to West Point for a camp. They were picked to finish dead last. They came up there, and Coach Riley,
the
hockey
legendary coach.
Coach Brian Riley calls me and says, hey, the Rangers want to do a team building event. I'm like, well, what do they want to do? He's like, I don't know. Go see the coach. So I came down here to Manhattan, saw the coach and Tom Rennie. And he's like, yeah, we want to simulate doing something outdoor the military does. I said, oh, how about a special forces assessment course?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, great. He wasn't sure what that was. So sure enough, we did this, you know, battle march and shoot for
the Ranger hockey players,
yeah. In the middle of the night, I got all the guys together.
Right.
I got the cadets together, and I'm like, and they're like, wait, we're going to like smoke professional athletes? I'm like, yep, that's what we're going to do. So that's what we did, and it went terrific. And at the end, Glenn Sather, you know, called me and said, hey, you're pretty good at this. And I was like, pretty good at what? And he's like, you're pretty good at this leadership thing. He's like, I watch how these men look at you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you should do this. And that's kind of when it started. And then I did it. And then in 2010, when I retired from the military, I just did it full time. So I've been doing it ever since.
Right. I mean, and I think you command, especially with civilians, you command a certain level of respect and admiration, having done all the things that you've done in your military career. So it seems as though it would be a natural transition. And that became something that a lot of other teams did up at West Point as well. A lot of other hockey teams.
Sure. They probably had 6 or 7 teams that have just come through there. And,
right.
And you know, West Point, for, you know, whatever people want to say, is it's one of the finest institutions in the modern free world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just recently, I met a young man who was accepted to West Point, but wasn't sure he was going to go. And and so his parents called me. I went to have lunch with the kid, and I'm like, why don't you want to go? Like, you hit the lottery. Like, seriously, you got in. Well, West Point or Notre Dame. You can always go to Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay? But you got a chance. Like, you went up there on your visit. How'd you feel? He's like, I felt like it was for me. There's your answer.
Right. Right.
Right. And as you know, like, the military academies aren't for everybody, but the ones that are, it's just a wonderful experience. You know, I was fortunate that, you know, my children got to grow up there.
Mm-hmm.
Got to grow up with. And they'll tell you to this day, like, wow, it was a great experience, you know, just being a kid at West Point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
And what was it like in your career just dealing with officers in general? Because you weren't an officer, so you're pumping West Point's tires.
Sure.
And you were not an officer, you know, a senior non-commissioned officer. But what was your experience with officers in the military throughout your career?
Well, if, you know, obviously I started off in the Ranger Regiment, so I only saw the best of the best, right? And so that was great. And then I was a drill instructor. Then I went back to the Ranger Regiment. Then I end up at West Point as attack NCO and Department of Military Instruction and also the first sergeant of the prep school. So, and I got to work at OCS as well, too. So, you know, I got to see the cream of the crop, the best of the best. And I enjoyed it. I loved imparting leadership on people. I loved learning from other leaders. And, you know, there was a couple of times that, you know, I got myself in some trouble and the officer came to my rescue.
Right.
Be like,
so
hey.
They do serve a purpose sometimes.
Yeah, came to my rescue and be like, hey, you know, so here, you know, here's the deal. You know, it was a great retired Army officer. He's a NYPD detective, Billy Hart. He had a great illustrious career, retired captain, Ranger qualified. Like, you know, he probably kept me from out of trouble a couple times.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the United States military is, as you know, is so perfectly set up for success.
Right.
And people are like, why is the military so good? Because it's done correctly.
Right.
I think also with leadership in the military, too, though, there's also it's. Human beings, just like anybody else, there's also bad leadership sometimes. And I think one of the most valuable things I took from it was one leader in particular that I had in my unit that wasn't great. And somebody told me, a higher enlisted person told me, well, then learn from that too. Right. You learn just as much from leadership you don't like as much as you do. So pay attention to what you don't like about it and learn from it and develop your own kind of thing. What kind of advice do you have? So you did this time in the military. Things with West Point athletics kind of shaped the way your career went after that. How do you impart, you know, you have this team like the Rangers that come up, they're doing terrible, they're low morale. How do you get people motivated to want to learn leadership and to keep motivation?
That's a terrific question, Kate. And I try to do two things, right? One through motivation and two through education. And I learned a lot from some bad leaders. I had some, you know, you had some crazy sergeants in the Army that are making you do the dying cockroach for hours, right? Like we've all done that and been like, well, I didn't learn anything from that. And so, you know, you want to take the positives out of that. I say in my book about how like one simple leader, like one battalion commander, as you know, can either take an organization from good to great or from good to average.
Right.
One commander. Right? One person can do that because of, are they a force multiplier? Are they trying to help the organization be successful? Or are they just worried about their next promotion?
Right.
Which we all know that sometimes that happens.
Sure.
And so, you know, what you have to do is, you know, you have to look at yourself and look at your skill set. Look, I'm a cheerleader. It works for me. But when I'm teaching leadership, especially to executives, they're like, well, you're so bubbly and up. I'm like, okay, you don't have to be me.
Right.
You don't have to be a cheerleader.
There's
but
a lot of different ways to be a
leader. That's exactly right. There are a lot of different ways to be a leader. If you're stoic, be stoic. Because if you're fake, people know it.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's very
transparent. Right. So if you go in and try to be like, hey, let's go. Like,
you look great today, Connor, by the way.
No, but it's funny. You know, when you're talking about soldiers, they have some of the best BS detectors in the world. They will see right through you very quickly. Yeah. But I mean, you're talking about yourself and your personality. You certainly have the personality, I can tell, that lends itself to this type of career path. Was the military always something you wanted to do in your life? And then subsequently, like, you were obviously an elite member of our military. Was that something that you went in saying, all right, I'm going to do this, or it happened by accident, or what was your path?
That's a great question, Connor. So, you know, there was a day that there wasn't the internet, okay? So let's just go there, okay? 1984, I was, you know, I was a decent high school student. I didn't know a whole lot about military. Middle-class kid from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My parents worked hard. I was like, you know what? I'm going to pay for my own college. Went to see the Army recruiter. Hey, I'd like the college fund. Army recruiter's like, great, no problem. And actually, he was field artillery. I remember that. And he's like, great, 4 years of college. What job do you want to do? I'm like, I have no idea. It gives me this big book.
Right.
And I'm like going through this book, communication, supply. And he like starts looking over my high school fitness transcripts. And he's like, do some push-ups. I did some push-ups. Yeah. And there was a pull-up bar across his door. He's like, do some pull-ups. I do some pull-ups. He's like, why don't you become an Army Ranger? I'm like, great. What do they do?
Sweet.
And he goes, jump out of airplanes, blow shit up. I said,
sold.
Sign me up.
Cool. Yeah.
Apologize for my language.
No, you're good. No, no, no.
I was like, sign me up. So then, you know, I'm at Fort Benning, Georgia, like home of the infantry. I'm like, where the hell am I?
Yeah.
So I complete my, you know, my basic in AIT. Then I go to airborne school. And then I show up at, back then it was called RIP, Ranger Indoctrination Program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I am like standing, there's like 130 of us, big guys. And I'm this like little kid from 5'8", probably 170 pounds. And I'm like, what did I get myself into? And these instructors came out and they were Grenader invaders. They wouldn't have gone to Grenada.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like the first combat since like Vietnam.
Right.
You know, and they're like, we don't care if any of you make it. I was like, oh my God. Like I believed him.
Yeah.
Like he's like, I don't care if any of you make it.
Right.
And then it, you know, it started. And I just said, well, I'm not going to quit today. Right. And that was my mantra. And that's what started like the mental toughness is like they can get rid of me, but I'm not going to quit. And, and you both know from being in the military, there's days like, I just got to make it to lunch.
Right.
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 Or are you laughing because you know, like, oh my God, I made it to lunch. Okay. Yeah. I just made it to dinner. I made another day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was my, and then you know, people just started to weed it out. And like 33 of us made it. And then I end up at 2nd Ranger Battalion. And fortunately, you know, you read my book. Actually, the guy that took the photo on my back, on the back of my book, Hugh Roberts, he's a retired sergeant major. He's actually the Ranger Regimental Sergeant Major.
Hmm.
You know, he's retired now. And he was my first squad leader. And you know how, like, God blesses you with the right first leader? He was the right first leader.
Right.
Yeah. Because
right.
there's some crazy people in special operations in a good way. And you know, he took me under his wing and he looked out for me, and he was one of those squad leaders that you know, he's well respected. He was a Grenader invader himself, and you know, no one messed with his squad. You
right,
know?
Right.
Like, you know,
right.
Like if you know, some E4 with a tab, mm-hmm. like the most dangerous rank in the military. a specialist with a Ranger tab, most dangerous rank, you know, would come up and be like, oh, the private's out in the hallway. Like, you didn't do that to his squad.
Right.
Because then you'd have to deal with Hugh Roberts. So, you know, I thought I was just going to go 4 years, go to college. I wanted to be a high school teacher, teach mm-hmm. history, coach hockey and baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, I got promoted. 2 years in, I'm a sergeant. Mm-hmm. 4 years in, I'm a staff sergeant.
Wow. Fast and I'm tracker.
Like, you know, 7 years in, I'm an E7.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, maybe I can do this.
Yeah, you're pretty squared away. I mean, so what rank were you when you were in Panama? What rank were you?
E6.
Okay,
yeah,
so six. I mean,
I jumped into Panama E6. Yeah,
you jumped into Panama. It's funny. I served with an E7 who, when I first met him, we ended up being really good buddies and worked really well together. But I remember the first time I met him, he didn't think too highly of me because he didn't know me yet, and he said to me, I was jumping into Panama when you were shitting your pants in kindergarten, sir, so why don't you shut the fuck up and we can figure this out. Wow. So that was like a, you know, a welcome to this guy type of moment. But what was that like, what, you know, fighting in Panama?
Yeah, so you know, obviously we have this like 8-hour C-130 ride.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys have been on a C-130, like, you know, 70 jumpers jammed, we're rigged up from mm-hmm. Fort Benning. And
built for comfort, C-130.
Built for comfort, C-130. We flew, because, you know, we were like, they were like trying to stay out of like radar. So mm-hmm. we like flew the long route to get to Panama. Next thing you know, we jump up 465 feet AGL. I remember jumping out. I didn't even check my canopy.
Yeah.
Because I noticed I'm like, there were like tracers already going. I'm like, okay, this is for real.
Yep. Yeah.
You know? And then, you know, I hit the ground and, you know, I get out of my... chute, and I'm trying to put my weapon into action. And so I had like two M72 A2 Laws shoved in my weapons case. So I'm like, Law, no, Law. I finally got to my carbine, put that together, and, you know, got right in the battle. So, and then I put my ruck on, and sure enough, you put your ruck on, my strap breaks.
Oh, shit. Lovely.
Yeah, lovely. I'm like, you know, I'm like,
who,
I'm like,
what military contractor got the lowest I'm like, bid yeah, to create so I'm those?
Like, you know, so beautiful. I like jerry rigged that thing. I put my, yeah. I put my ruck on. I take like 5 steps, you know, get my NVGs ready, right into Constantino wire. Now I'm like hung up in Constantino wire.
Man.
I am like, you know, so now I'm like, I'm going to be the last one at the assembly area, which you never want to be.
Right.
So now I'm like all stressed out, and I finally get the assembly area, and I was actually the second guy. So I set it up. And
when the rest got there, were you like, what a bunch of losers?
I'm like, what took you so long? Yeah. Where you been?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so, but, wow. You know, the Rangers were, it was a great learning place for me. And I got to tell you though, like my first time out of the Rangers, I was a DI, a drill instructor. And mm-hmm. that was my first time in like the real army,
right?
Right. Regular army, they call it. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And fortunately, I had guys there that were that helped me. You know, I had a guy from Army Marksmanship Unit. Mm-hmm. I had a guy that was, E6, 18 years in, 11 Charlie, you know, mm-hmm. mortar guy. And they, like, took me under their wing because I was, like, their boss.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't even know how to do this regular Army stuff. But it was such a great learning tool for me. And then I went back to the Ranger Regiment, was a platoon sergeant, and then ended up at West Point. Yeah. And I knew a little bit about West Point. Not really. You mm-hmm. know, I had some lieutenants that were West Point, some captains and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Great experience.
So, and it was your time with the Rangers and that mm-hmm. really clicked. You knew you were getting out. You had done over 20 years. And did you know at that point, like, I'm really on to something here? This is definitely going to be my path? Or
yeah. So after my first tour, like first 4 years in the military, like, I said, okay, I'm pretty good at this. I mm-hmm. think I can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was getting promoted quickly. And I'm like, all right, I think I can do this. And then I just kind of stayed in. I never, you know, really, that really wasn't my path. And then, but it worked out for me. And then obviously 26 years later and then being able to transition it to be a professional leadership and
right.
culture coach for businesses and people. And what I found there is how many people really need it and are starved for it.
Right.
You know, and like, I life coach CEOs and C-suite executives and professional golfers, professional poker players, professional athletes. And it's like, it's somebody that I can go to that's not going to judge them, mm-hmm. not going to take their job and wants them to be better.
What would you say was the biggest challenge that you ever faced when you were in the military?
Well, I think I went to SEER school, you mm-hmm. know, survival, evasion, resistance, escape. And I had gotten sick while I was there. I ate some raw goat meat and they weren't going to let me go on the evasion, the last part. And I was like, because if they send you out, you know, you're not going to come back. It's just, you know, it's just the way it's going to be. Like, I'm not going to get a chance to come back.
Nobody recycles SEER school.
No. Right. So I was sick and, you know, I went to it's out there at Camp Row mm-hmm. at Fort Bragg. And the doctor at the TMC that night was the Delta Force doctor. And he had saw I'd already been to combat, everything else. And I'm like, Doc, you can't send me back. I was the staff sergeant. I said, they said, the Rangers won't send me back here. So, you know, shot me up with some drugs. And he's like, okay, you know, you're not going to be able to eat for a while. And then sure enough, you go on this evasion. You know, I don't even remember how long it was, 8 or 9 days. Then you get captured and you're in this compound. And
right.
And that's where I really had to like dig in and be like, okay, this is going on for a while. Mm-hmm. I know it's a volunteer course, but I need to suck it up.
Mm-hmm. What did right? you tell yourself to get through it?
I said, there was really no food. So I'm like, let me just make it another minute.
Right.
right? Like, you know, you had no sense of time. So I'm like, okay, let me make it to nightfall
right.
and then make it the day the next time. And I think that, you know, anytime you're doing anything difficult, you know, if you shorten your window, you mm-hmm. narrow your focus, right? Yeah. And you both know sometimes combat's a little easier because you've narrowed your focus. Mm-hmm. You're not worried about everything else going on. You're worried about this right then. I have to take care of these men and women next to me. I have to complete this objective, and that's all I'm worried about. So, you know, if you're a business professional or you're an athlete and you're worried about something, narrow your focus that day, mm-hmm. right? Streamline it. And then, you know, get off the hope train. Right? Like, oh, I right. hope everything's okay. I hope I get promoted. I hope this, you know, if you're on the hope train, it's going to crash. Have some faith, like, but you have to have some faith by putting in the work.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
right.
sometimes the best person for the job doesn't get the job.
Correct.
That's the right. way it goes. Mm-hmm. But if you put in the work, you know, you do the work in the dark places, right? Like, you look at all even the greatest professional athletes, Jordan, Larry Bird, all of them, like, they were shooting hoops, Mario Lemieux, Sidney Crosby, like, they're shooting pucks like when it's dark, literally.
Right.
So do the work in the hard places, and you know, you don't always need fanfare for that. And if you keep after it, you be successful. There's so many things for people to get ahead today, right?
Right.
They can call me, obviously jbsleaders.com. Follow me at my Instagram at jbspizo, or you know, take an online learning course. There's plenty of things you can do to help yourself. Right? Stay motivated, stay fit, stay focused.
I just have one more question, and then I just want to fire through some fast questions. But if you had 2 minutes with someone who really, really needed some leadership advice, 2 minutes, what's your spiel to them to get them to where you think they can succeed further?
Easy, great question. My answer is be a force multiplier. And what I mean by that is do whatever's necessary to help your organization be successful. If you're walking by the copier and the copier's out of paper, put paper in the copier, mm-hmm. right? That's not my job. Yeah, it is your job. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's garbage on the floor, pick the garbage up.
Can you go tell that to people here in HQ?
Yeah, you know what? I will. I'll do whatever I can.
Our printer's empty. There's trash everywhere. We've got mice.
You know what?
Barstool really needs a sergeant major.
Yeah. Well, but that's what you do. Do whatever it takes to be successful. Like, and if you want to get to that highest level, like, do that. Don't ask people to do it for you. You do it for them, mm-hmm. right? Be a, and you know, at West Point, you had classes on it. Be a servant leader.
Right.
Servant leader means I'm going to help others be successful.
But my last question is, much like I affectionately call him Grandpa Jerry, because we said he was so old, that he's 7, who told me he was jumping into Panama when I was pooping my diapers. Yeah. Did you ever have to use that with anybody to let them know, like, hey, listen to what I'm telling you because I've been there and I know what I'm talking
you
about.
You know, that's really not my delivery style. You're right. Yeah. I've been a hard ass. Mm-hmm. Like when I was a DI, I was known to, you know, wake the company up at 3 a.m. and put them on the track, right? Yeah. I was that guy that, because you fell asleep on fire watch, the whole company's going out and doing a road march. And, you know, the guy's out there in a Kevlar and flip-flops because he didn't have time to put his boots on.
Yeah.
I actually talk in my book about how I scathed a young ranger. We were on the USS America, and I scathed the young ranger, bit his ear off one way, up one side, down the other. And I thought about that later, and it bothered me for a while because, you know, he probably didn't have it coming. And so, you know, I took the platoon frustration out on him as the platoon sergeant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I never tried to go at anybody negatively.
Right.
Right. I was tough. But, you know, any leader that demeans, like that sergeant that said mm-hmm. that to you, I would have like been like, if I was a sergeant major, I'd been like, come here, sergeant.
Oh, yeah. Right. No, I didn't. Yeah, I laugh about it now because it's a funny sentiment.
Yeah.
But back then, that only got me more angry.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, ultimately, we came to an agreement and became, as I said, you know, good buddies. But at the time, I didn't like to hear
that. Well, and it's, you know, sometimes it's what people think is like a rite of passage. And sometimes we do that in the military. Like, you know, you have a guy that goes through selection to be in a ranger platoon. Now he's in, mm-hmm. and the sergeants are like, yeah, the FNG, the cherry, whatever, mm-hmm. you know. I'm like, he already passed selection.
Right.
Right.
Like, I need his gun in the fight because his gun might save me and I can go home and see my kids.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, like, all of a sudden people are like, oh, like, I'm not a rite of passage guy. I think mm-hmm. that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think it's barbaric. It's archaic. Mm-hmm. It's old school. Yeah, sure. You know, a young person's not going to say, this is the room I want to sleep in or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are standards for that. But however, you know, the sooner you implement a young person into your group, whether it's an office building, or whatever, like I know, like some of these people, like they get these interns in the summer and they like treat these interns like, you know, like I'm going to just abuse the interns and the one that can take the most abuse, I'm going to hire. I'm like, yeah, well then the most talented one probably already is weeded out.
Sure.
So what are you trying to hire? You're trying to hire talent? Like, you know, this is not, as you both know, in the military has a selection process because they can just get more people.
Right. Right. Yeah,
right. So exactly. That's why they have Hell Week or this other stuff. You know, when I was running OCS, I was a first sergeant in the OCS. The first thing I did was I took that stupid bell away.
Right.
and like, the sergeants almost had a revolt.
Yeah.
They were like, first sergeant, what? Even the officers, they were like, what are you doing? And the colonel walked up to me, he was a West Point grad. And I said, sir, like people smarter than us have selected these men and women to come to OCS.
Right.
Why are we reselecting them?
Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good point.
And he's like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, they're either going to make the course or they're not going to make the course.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But like, you know, somebody had to sign off on these packets, right? Their leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you're exactly right. And I got rid of the bell. And then people started to understand it. Okay. I get it.
Right.
So.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for sure. A lot of times being demeaning and yelling, especially in the Marine Corps, gets mistaken for leadership when that's not leadership. Sometimes it's warranted, but a lot of good lessons. And you can find that in his book, Warrior Leadership. You can go to his website, jbsleaders.com. Is there anything else? What's next for you? What's the big thing coming up?
Well, I'm still working with great businesses and continue doing that. I'm going to do a little bit of an online learning module coming out here shortly.
Awesome.
So that's going to be great. So people can actually see me live and be interactive, and I'll teach them some mental toughness. And and I just want to say thank you both for your service. Thanks for having me today.
Oh,
I appreciate
you.
It. No, it was short notice. And
you know, also can be found on the Spit and Chicklets podcast coming up.
That's right.
And I'm sure there's a few more hockey stories on that show.
That'll be good.
So, you got anything good about Biz or Wit that you can share with our listeners?
It's great. Well, you know, Wit, he was a little hesitant to go through the swamp, but he did it.
I believe it.
He did it. Yeah. But he was good. And Biz actually... One time when I was working with Pittsburgh, he was giving Sidney Crosby a little bit of the business. So, and I was like, let's see how long this is going to last, you know? And then, you know, Sid kind of gave it back to him, and it was good. But both great people did great things. I love working with athletes too and business people because people just want to be successful.
Yeah. Right. Like,
you know, so, you call me, I'm going to help you. I don't care what you do.
Right.
Like, so there's hope for me yet.
You know? I think you're doing
it. We'll get you on the leadership. Somewhere.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
If you want to check out more on that dude, go check out our ice hockey podcast.
Okay. They're making fun of me because I said ice hockey podcast.
There are a lot of variations of hockey podcasts out there, so we want to be specific.
It's the ice hockey one, Spit and Chicklets.
I'm glad Kate said it because I would have said ice hockey too. I definitely would have said ice hockey, just being completely honest. Because I like Spit and Chicklets dudes are fucking hilarious. I listen to their shit without even knowing anything about hockey at all. It's an enjoyable podcast. You know what else is enjoyable? Liquid fucking Death. I love whenever Liquid Death has an ad because their cans are so cool. You can't have a gallon, a jug of water like we talked about in round three, but nobody can say shit if you're shotgunning a little Liquid Death to the face. you might want to go to their website and pick up a can or 12 yourself because Liquid Death is actually really good water. It's actually from the mountain and is rich with natural electrolytes and minerals. There's nothing like a little freezing cold can of water to murder your bitch-ass thirst.
Can I tell you from my bitch-ass heart why I love it? Because it's so much better than plastic. There's been a big movement lately, a push towards more aluminum stuff, and it's so much better for you. And I worry about, like, overseas, all the plastic. Remember all the water bottles we drank overseas? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they say sitting in the sun, the plastic, all that shit. You don't have to worry about that with these cans. They're badass.
True.
Yes.
That is very true. Liquid Death donates 5 cents from every can they sell to help clean up plastic pollution and bring back clean drinking water to those in need. But Liquid Death is only available to a handful of stores, so you have to order it online. Just go to liquiddeath.com/CBT. They're offering your listeners an exclusive deal to get $2 off every single case. That's liquiddeath.com/CBT. Or better yet, you can click on the option to literally sell your soul to their website in exchange for a free case. Yes, you can sign up for a real soul contract that is legally binding for eternity. If that doesn't get you to go to their website, which is liquiddeath.com/CBT, just to check out what the fuck that's about, I don't understand you as a person. Move on to save rounds, alibis, cons. We'll start with you.
I just want to say I love October, man. It's the best month of the year. Best weather, football. Got my birthday in 2 weeks.
Woo-hoo.
It's actually a kind of a big one, 35.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
You're getting old.
I know.
My goodness.
And also, Chaps, the story before about the goofing in the shower where the guy was, you know, spraying the shampoo on the guy and he couldn't figure out why his head kept getting shampooed. Mm-hmm. We used to do that in college. In the locker room, guy would be walking out of the shower, like, all done, and you'd, like, throw soap at him. It was great. Always loved that. Always got a laugh.
A little soap tossing. Yeah. I got no save rounds. I'm SIQ. I'm malingering. I'm not well.
I don't think you're malingering. Very
I probably need to. I need to hydrate more. I think that's the thing. But that's it.
What would you attribute getting sick to?
I don't know, because I was telling you guys I quit smoking. I way cut back on my drinking. I've been trying to be healthier and better all around, and now I get sick. So I'm going to start doing both again. Back to old Kate. This didn't
work.
There
we go.
You think your body's just rejecting?
My save round is, last week we talked about having to establish new types of leadership and the way to go about combating suicide, because a new survey came out that this is the highest year on record of military suicides. There is an Air Force, the Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force. His name is Kalitho Wright. He had some talk on suicide, and I think he absolutely fucking nailed it. So we're going to end the show with a clip of him talking about how we need to combat suicides in the military. Here's the Chief Master Sergeant of the Air Force.
So when we decided to do this pause pretty quickly, maybe a day or two afterwards, a Facebook page popped up. And this page is called Air Force Wingman Outreach. Anybody familiar? So it was probably 2 weeks ago, last I checked, 30,000 airmen have become a part of this community, and they are giving their testimonials and telling their stories about this topic. And it's mostly about suicides and why. And there's some concerns about our mental health system, and people have reached out, and the system, our own Air Force mental health system, as well as military OneSource, has not been responsive or has not met their needs. Some actually pretty appalling stories. There's been some concerns over the stigma that still exists around suicide, some of it from the Air Force and fear of losing a clearance or being deniffed or denicked or DNA'd if you're a defender. And then some of it from the social stigma that exists. Not what the Air Force thinks, but what my teammates might think if I have to take a knee if I'm unable to go. But frankly, if you've been paying attention to what airmen are saying, they're mostly talking about us. They're talking about leadership and leadership being toxic and leadership not being able to connect and leadership not caring or being concerned. So this is a real opportunity for us to listen, to not necessarily be judgmental about, you know, how they feel, but really to listen and see how we can best meet the needs of some of our airmen that are, and this is not all about grit and resilience and some of those things. I mean, we have some airmen that are struggling and suffering with some real, you know, tough issues, depression, anxiety, and some of the other ills in life. So I think that we have a real opportunity here to listen and be responsive right now, and in the future figure out how we can prevent airmen from getting to the point. You know, you hear General Goldfein talk about it all the time. They leave basic training very hopeful, and then pretty quickly they get to being hopeless. And really that's us. That's on us to figure out what things we should be doing better. I have an opportunity to interact with quite a few of our airmen who thought about taking their own lives and they didn't. And I can tell you, I can count on my pinky the number of airmen who said, the reason I didn't was some program or some process or some video or some training. Every single one of them said it was because of this person, this supervisor, this commander, this teammate, this person that I connected with that showed some interest in me and my well-being, and that was why I made the decision that I made. So, you know, we have to do this together. Leadership, myself, General Goldfein, all of our MAJCOM, and senior level officials, yeah, we have to make sure that we clear out as much of the chaff as we can to allow airmen the space to be able to do their jobs and have a little downtime and be resilient. But the folks who are out there on the front lines leading, you know, people don't wake up every morning thinking about us up here at this table. They think about the folks that they have to go in to work with every single day, first line supervisors, teammates, and that's where I think we'll make the greatest difference.